Good morning. It's good to see you all this morning. You know, I can't see from behind the pulpit, and so it's lovely to stand up here, and there you all are. Yay. So I am not surprised that it has taken to the third week in the season of Advent to contemplate the idea of joy. Joy is, it's actually not as easy as our kids just talked about. And it is, it's way more than simply being happy. Joy is like deep in your bones and in your gut, where you can feel it in your feet. Joy is big and heavy, and it announces itself in like, la la. I cannot sing, so I'm not going to talk about Mary's singing abilities, by the way, with this Magnificat. But I was thinking about this idea of joy, because isn't it why we come to church, you know, on Sunday mornings? It's sort of to think about those ways of being in life and ways of showing up as individuals or as a whole community, and to learn this thing called joy. And I only know what I know, right? So I'm going to try my best in this space. And I am sure that over the next few days and weeks, and we can continue to talk about this idea of joy. But I was thinking about the way that I show up in the world. I never have big goals ever in my life. That is just not how my brain has worked. I never knew that I would be up on this chancel being a minister. I never knew that I would get my doctorate, but rather I just show up in the day or in the week, maybe a month, but not much more than that, and try to make the best choices I can make today. Try to do the best thing I could do today. Maybe have these micro habits that are effective. These little itty bitty habits that are effective that I do over and over again. And they're effective because they compound. They stack on each other. And so then once they stack and once they compound, then maybe I can get to a place, and then maybe the church community can get to the place that they eventually want to be. Because these micro habits, they affect the individual, but we also can do it within a church community to shift a culture or an identity. And so I was thinking about these micro habits, these effective micro habits. And then I thought about this doctorate I got. And one of the main things that I researched was the idea of ritualizing relationships. So we all know what ritualizing means, and we all know what relationships mean, right? But together we're like, what the heck does that even mean? Like, what did you actually research? And so we know these things in our society already, these traditional ritualizing of relationships, like weddings. Those are ritualizing of relationships, or even baptism, the person's relationship with the church community. That's ritualizing relationships. But I didn't come up with this term, ritualizing relationships. Scholar Marjorie Proctor Smith came up with it. And what she meant was this. Ritualizing relationships, like our traditional rituals, always have God and the sacred and the holy in the center of it, right? But the difference is the ritualizing relationships that she's talking about is that they are grounded in the lived experiences of the two or more people that are creating that ritual together. They are created out of the lived experience of the person. The second thing is that they are not critiqued by scholars or experts. They are not critiqued at all. They are honored for the ritual where God is in the center for what they are. And the third thing about these ritualizing relationships is that they emancipate the people that are practicing the ritual, meaning they free them from whatever bondages they feel tied up in. It might be the societal norms. It might be the church of their upbringing. It might be their family. Whatever you feel like you are like in bondage, enslaved around, where you feel stuck, these ritualizing relationships that are created by the lived experience emancipate the people. And so I began to think of Mary and Elizabeth, these two women from the first century. There's Mary, who is maybe 13. She's a girl, maybe a woman, maybe, and she's pregnant, and she's unmarried. She does have a partner, so that's good, but she seemingly has no idea how she got pregnant. And that's scary. And that's hard, and it's difficult, and there's anxiety. So we read the scripture text, and we see this wonderful joy and all this awe. But at the end of the day, Mary was human, and that was really hard to be pregnant when you're 13. And then there's Elizabeth, who had been trying to have a baby for a really long time. And in the first century, not being able to bear children meant that she didn't really have an identity. And so she was an old woman, and I use air quotes because she was probably like 32 or something. And she finally gets pregnant. But the grief and anguish and sadness of not being able to bear a child was hard. How did they get to that point where they could experience joy? How did they come to that moment? And I don't know anything about Mary and Elizabeth's upbringing or their family, but Mary decides to seek out Elizabeth. And so she journeys to her home. She seeks a family member, a loved one, a comrade, and she knocks on the door, and the door opens, and Elizabeth is pregnant, and so is Mary. And la la! She sings the Magnificat, and there is this moment of deep and abiding joy. And in that moment, in that ritualizing of relationship, see, they created that moment. God was at the center, and they were emancipated from the Roman Empire and all of the societal norms at that time that held them hostage. They felt that joy in that moment. What was it? I don't know. What I know is in the first century, they didn't have as many distractions as we do today in the 21st century, or at least I can imagine that. And so I think, well, maybe we need some more tools right now, right? Maybe we need some things to help us get to that moment of joy more often. And how do we practice that? And how do we do that in our lives? Because I know that there are really hard things about your lives. I know that there are illnesses. I know that your children are struggling. I know that there is job loss. I know that you don't like your job. I know that you feel lonely. So how do we get to that place of joy? So did you know that the bamboo, just work with me for a minute, the bamboo plant, that it has a deep, huge root system underneath the ground that is 90 feet, and it takes 5 years to create that root system before a bamboo even sprouts out the top. It works and works and works. And then, boom, it's over the threshold, and there's a bamboo shoot. So we think that there is these overnight successes, like a best-selling author or an actress. But I am guessing that they had compounded, stacking, effective habits that went on top of each other and on top of each other, or grew deeply into the ground, and we didn't even know it. And then all of a sudden, they have this moment of joy. And then another example is I started knitting again this month. I learned how to knit years ago. And so I found this really tiny, simple pattern of a Christmas tree, tiny little Christmas tree. But you know, knitting patterns are like this foreign language to me, right? And so you really can't look at the end result, because then you freak out. You're like, yeah, there's no way that's gonna work. But you start off, I know you knitters out there feel me, right? You start at the beginning and you start doing one stitch and then one stitch and then another and then another. And then all of a sudden I have 12 Christmas trees. I do, and I'm hanging them from my chandelier, because what else do you do with them, right? They're so cute, though. I'll post them on Facebook so you can see. The other, I want you to imagine that you're in a cold room. It's about 25 degrees. And you can see your breath in front of you. And there's an ice cube. And it's not melting. So, right? So you turn up the degrees to 25 or 26, 27. Still not melting. You turn up the degrees to like 28, 29, 30, not melting. 31, no melt, you just sit there. You turn it up to 32 degrees, boom, in 1 degree, the ice cube begins to melt. It takes 1 degree. So you practice these micro effective habits over and over and over again. And you might not see where it's leading, but then boom, it gets over the threshold and la la, you're singing the Magnificat. You're having that moment of joy. Mary and Elizabeth were not overnight successes. They weren't all of the sudden going to be the mother of the Son of God, and they weren't going to be mother of John the Baptist. That did not happen overnight. I don't know how it happened, but there is a reason. They were faithful, persistent women who had the tenacity to have these micro effective habits that stacked and stacked and stacked until they had that moment of joy. Now, we know in our world today, there are many mothers of the movement like Mary and Elizabeth. There are some modern day mothers of the movement. I saw a clip where there was a group of Palestinian mothers and a group of Israeli mothers, and they were coming together to protest and rally, saying, "Don't kill my children." Did the war in Gaza stop that day? No. But they show up day after day, this renewed habit of rallying and protesting for justice and for good and for turning over tables and disrupting the Roman Empire and doing good for the world. And they just show up day after day after day to do that work. And then in the Christian Century this month, there was actually an article called The Mothers of a Movement. And it was about a few mothers, Black mothers. And we know the intersection between the African-American communities and environmental justice. Often these Black communities are on toxic lands. And so these mothers showed up day after day, years after years, to tell their story, to get it shifted. They went to their churches and told their story. They bear children. They told their children. Their children fought for it. And finally, after years, it got national attention. Their story was heard, but they did not stop. And I can imagine that Mary and Elizabeth, that moment of joy, that practice of singing that song in the moment after a long and hard journey did not end. Their life practices, those micro-effective habits that would stack, because my God, they raised amazing human beings that had voices, were creative, changed the world. That song that Mary sung, that hymn had been sung by her mom and her mom and her mom. It was a practice of her faith. Only then she wove in her own story into that hymn and made it anew. So my hope for you is that maybe you start stacking those effective habits, tiny micro habits. You get up in the morning, you go to the bathroom, you go get your coffee, and you say a kind word to your partner. You do that every day. And then maybe you add something after your kind word to your partner. Maybe you do some stretches. Then maybe you take your dogs on a walk and you keep on stacking those, and you'll get to the place that you never knew you would be, but it's amazing, like Mary and Elizabeth. Amen.